Today's episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at tryexpressvpn.com/cinemarecall. That's tryexpressvpn.com/cinemarecall.
This is a movie which is difficult to interpret or to understand. Could you elaborate on this?
It's a lot like music. Music, they say, is an abstraction. It is very far away from words. And film is a thing that people, they want to have an easy understanding of a film, whereas with music, they don't have that problem. There's not an intellectual thing going on. It's just an experience. But film has those same elements of just experience. Plus, film can say abstractions that can be intuited. So you use your intuition. And then an understanding comes inside you. And I think people should trust the understanding that comes to them from the experience. Now, it might be hard to take what's inside of you and tell your friend in words what that is. It's like a dream sometimes. You tell your friend a dream, and you can see in the face. They don't understand. The words fail you, but still you know inside. So it's not that difficult to understand if you trust your inner feeling.
This podcast is a proud member of the Let's Chat Club. Find out how you can become a member by going to the website letschatpodcast.net. The Fallen podcast will contain adult language and heavy spoilers. It is intended for a mature audience. Again, everybody, and welcome to this, the very last episode in our Map of Mulholland Drive series happening at Cinema Recall. I'm your host, The Vern, and joining me, hopefully not for the last time, I think I can bribe them to come on again, we have with us Jason Soto from Whatever with Jason Soto. Welcome back, Jason.
Hello, thanks for having me back. Hope you didn't miss me last week.
Well, I understand.
No, we didn't.
Ryan, okay, we did. Joining us again, Mr. Ryan Luis Rodriguez from the Reels of Justice podcast, as well as Twitter Coolness Chronicles. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thank you for having me, and I'll send you my Venmo number so we can haggle out whatever the next episode is going
to
be.
I love that, and I would gladly pay. You guys have been awesome. Well, we missed you, Jason, because we didn't mention this on our last episode, but you recently had a birthday, so happy late birthday.
Happy birthday!
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much, you guys. Thank you.
And you were a guest on the MILFcast with Heather Bastille.
No, the other way around.
The other way around. No, but no, they were on your show, Whatever, yes, with Jason Soto. That's right.
Yes.
But they had a live Twitch stream of the MILFcast with you. It was a weird, like, crossover series. It's like Marvel and DC crossover that you had with the MILFcast.
Okay, if you want to put it that way, yeah, sure, I guess you could look at
it
that way.
It was an amalgam comics thing, but for podcasting. Cool.
And yep. It was really kind of brilliant. So listeners out there, the MILFcast was one of the first podcasts I've ever listened to. And they are a major inspiration and whatnot. And it was funny because they have like little bumpers and musical things they do before each of their sections. And what Jason did, Jason reached out. Go ahead and explain this, Jason, because this is actually kind of brilliant.
Okay. All right. So I've been planning this for like a month, a little bit over a month. And Kai Parker, one of the hosts of the MILFcast, said he's never been on my show, whereas Heather's been on like multiple times. So I arranged for both of them to come on the show, thinking, hey, that'd be a lot of fun. when I came up with that idea, I immediately went to, oh, you know what would be fun is if I could rip off their theme song, and better yet, if I can get the guy who does their theme song to do the rip-off theme song, that would be even better. So I contacted the guy, his name's Steve Bush, who does the theme song for the MILFcast, and I said, hey, I told him the idea, and he was all into it. He's like, yeah, totally, just tell me what lyrics you want. So I gave him the lyrics, and then like in a week later, he gave me the song, and it sounds pretty identical to the MILFcast theme song, but with new lyrics reflecting my podcast. And I couldn't see their reaction because I had like a script up and I had the file playing, so I had the camera covered. But they're supposed to be putting the Twitch stream up on YouTube, and I cannot wait to see that, just to see what the reactions were. Because the audio wise, they were mad at me, but I wanted to see like their faces like drop when they realized what was being played.
It's really kind of brilliant. It's Heather like holds a knife.
I did come back when I was done with my script. I did come back to the Zoom camera and I saw her holding a knife, and I was like, God damn, okay, I didn't think you took it that seriously.
Oh gosh. It's hilarious. So go check that out. Listen to the episode of Whatever with Jason Soto on all your favorite podcast platforms, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff right there. Now, Ryan.
Yes.
You recently released part two of your – basically your anniversary episode, your 100 episodes of Reels of Justice.
50 episodes, sorry.
But
1 year.
1 year anniversary, 50 episodes. My apologies. You had on for the first part Trace Ballou from Mystery Science Theater 2000, and then part two is Frank Conniff. Am I saying that right?
Yep, saying it right.
So how was that to have Frank on the show?
It was great. I mean, it's the second time he's been on, so that's amazing that I've gotten to talk to two of my heroes more than once. But yeah, I mean, Frank is, he's such a font of movie knowledge that it's really hard to kind of stump him on anything, but just being able to talk to him about basically anything was kind of a thrill.
Well, hell yeah. That is exciting. But definitely find Rules of Justice podcast. Where you find your podcasts at, like I said before, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts,
iHeartRadio. Everywhere you can find this show, you can find us.
Very good. All right. Now, one thing, now we're going to get into our last sessions of Mulholland Drive, but there's something in the news that I heard recently, and I just want to get your guys' impersonation, your reaction to this, all right? And okay. It's about Rob Zombie directing a monsters movie. Did you see this?
Yeah,
I did. I'm curious what Rob Zombie's gonna do with what's clearly a comedy IP.
Yeah.
Like, is he gonna like make it like horror? Like, what's he gonna do? Like, make it like super dark? Like, I don't know like what he's gonna do.
Because he's never done a kids movie before.
Or a comedy for that matter. So yeah.
I mean, some of his movies are accidentally funny, but. Yeah, I guess he hasn't technically done a comedy.
Yeah, because this movie, I mean, The Munsters is a kind of a family show. It's a family franchise show. So I imagine the studios want him to release a movie that's PG-13. But also I'm afraid, too, that it's going to go into the route of the Banana Splits movie and be horror when it doesn't need to be, like a lot of gore and... Mm-hmm. I don't want that. I'm a little nervous he's going to cast his wife again, which makes me really
dreaded. He will. You know he will.
I think he's going to be...
That's all he does.
I think
she's going to be Marilyn Munster. I guarantee it.
Really? Oh, no. Totally. Oh, she's too old now. I'm sorry, Sherry Moon. You can't be the, you know, the hot-looking blonde anymore, the young blonde. No, it's not going to work. I'm sorry. You got to move on. And... I would just do it. I wanted to give a shout out there. Like, I know like Eli Roth, he did a movie with Jack Black.
I think, House with a Clock in Its Walls.
Yeah. And I'm always curious when, like, directors go outside their comfort zones. So, if this movie actually is going to be PG or PG-13, I'll be excited to see it. But if it's going to be a rated R, I'm probably not going to watch it right away. I'll watch it, but just not something I'd watch right away.
It's interesting that this comes after Tim Burton is doing an Addams Family TV show, because the Munsters is the ripoff of the Addams Family.
Yeah.
And to get somebody who is definitely inferior to Tim Burton in Rob Zombie, that's an interesting choice.
Yeah. I don't know. We should definitely see. I know, like, Tim Burton also adapted, like, Dark Shadows.
And that didn't turn out so great.
I know, yeah.
That was pretty bad. Having just actually seen it, oh, fuck, that movie.
Okay. All right. Well, let's do this as always do. We're going to take a quick break, play some ad spots from some other great show, play something from our sponsors, and then we'll be back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Have you been thinking about a film for quite some time now? Have you got nowhere to turn to talk about it? Well, the Film for Thought podcast is here for you. Every fortnight, I invite a guest on to talk about any film of their choice. It could be old or new, controversial or classic. If you have some thoughts about films, I want to discuss them. New episodes drop every second Friday, so make sure to come along and check out the Film for Thought podcast.
Hello everyone, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Each week we review
the latest from Hollywood, California.
Well, yes, Brendan. We also
give top three lists.
Okay, yeah, thanks again, Brendan. Additionally, you can hear us
talk other movie news, trailers, varying movie series, or other interesting film-related topics, and even rants and raves of the week.
That's correct, Brendan. On top of our main show, every Friday,
you can also hear our extra film podcasts.
Good job, Brendan.
Thank you, JD. It's my goal to make you proud. You're the father, after all.
Yes, and I'm very proud. You can listen to the In Session Film podcast on
iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at InSessionFilm.com.
Brendan, will you please let me complete just one?
Nope.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Listen to the In Session Film podcast every Monday and Friday. Subscribe today and hear me verbally beat JD like a Cherokee drum.
No. That's not how this works, sir.
Hey,
no.
Go cry at Midnight Special again, okay? That's what you're good for.
I will. You know what? And I'll do it while pummeling you. I'll do both at the same time.
How are you going to pummel me? Yeah. I don't
this podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Today's episode of Cinema Recall is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Now, if you're like me, you spend a lot of time online. And if you want to make sure that your activity is always protected, a VPN, or virtual private network, is a secure tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN is used specifically to protect your search traffic from any snooping, interference, and censorship. And right now, you can get 3 months free at tryexpressvpn.com/cinemarecall. Again, that's tryexpressvpn.com/cinemarecall to get your free 3 months today.
You've come back.
I think it has a lot of themes playing, one of which is that life is an illusion, that part of life is a dream. And in Mulholland Drive, you get to decipher which part is a dream, which one's real, which makes it very interesting.
No, I banda.
And we're back. We're here for the Map of Mulholland Drive series. Now, where to begin with this? Now, when we last left off our last episode, Rita and Betty, they just got back from that club where a woman sees Roy Orbison's crying in Spanish.
Yes.
They get back. They open up a box. This is the box that they find in the purse at the club. They get back home. And Rita goes to grab like something from the hat box. She turns around. Bam. Betty's gone. She takes the key, opens up the box, and you see the camera move into the box, and it drops. And now both characters gone. That's what we left out. That was a big cliffhanger from our last episode that both women are gone now. Where the hell do they go? Now,
after just becoming lovers, too.
It always happens, too. Always when, like, hot women get together, they have to leave.
I know. It's a tragedy.
But here's the weird thing, too. So after the bots, like, drops to the ground, we see Aunt Ruth appear. She comes back in. But here's the part that I wasn't too sure about. It seems like she never left. Like, did you guys get anything like that? Like, she comes to the room, like, she hears a sound. But it's almost like she's been staying there their whole time.
Right. Yeah, like it. Like it's like, you know, like you're there. Like she was just at home and she heard a noise, so she went to go investigate it and was like, oh, nothing's here. And then she just left.
Yeah. And then you start to see, like, the scenery change a little bit. Then the weird thing is that we are back in the same room where Betty and Rita first saw the dead body.
Yes.
And you see this, the cowboy comes in and he says, hey, pretty girl, time to wake up. And the same angle where that dead body is actually wakes up and it looks like Betty, but it's not vaguely like her. And this is actually Diane Selwyn.
Yes.
Yes.
As we learn later on. And I don't see, for me, this is where the movie becomes real. This is where she's waking up from her dream, the Diane character. She's waking up from her dream. Now, some say that this could be another dream and the other world is real. What do you think?
I think this part on is the real world, and I think we're just getting glimpses of what really happened. Like, it's done kind of out of order a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, it starts with her waking up, and there's a knock on her door, and it's that one lady from the dream who says she switched apartments.
Yeah.
And it turned out she actually switched apartments with Diane, a.k.a. Naomi Watts' character. And then what happens is a series of flashbacks, because she's probably thinking about the dream she had, about all the shit that she done, and then we kind of get, you know, flashes of, you know, everything that happened. So I think this is the point on where we're in the real world, and it's also the part where the movie gets really weird.
Yes.
Well, and I made a note that said that it's very strange that David Lynch made a movie where 75% of it, if not 85% of it, is a dream, but that part is like the normal part of the movie. And it's not until when the character wakes up into the real world where then the movie gets, like, fucked up.
Yeah, it's like the first 2 hours of the movie is the dream world in a way. And when the neighbor comes by to, like, grab all her stuff, there's a clue about pay attention to the ashtray.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you do that? Because what happens is that Diane starts to make her coffee. And everything looks kind of, like, dreary. Everything looks, like, kind of dark. It's raining. She grabs her coffee. Actually, no, she's there. She turns and she sees, you know, Rita. And she says, Camilla, you came back. But it was just something in her mind. So she's back to having things be dreary again. And when she makes her coffee and she goes to the couch, we see Rita topless. And all of a sudden, Diane, who's wearing a robe, suddenly she's topless.
Yep.
And then the ashtray's back. And everything has, like, this bright light about it. It's, like, all lit very, like, professionally. Everything seems a lot bright and sunny outside. It's not, like, rainy and dreary. So when that happened, and I saw the clue about the ashtray, I'm like, oh, we're in Diane's fantasy again. Oh. And after that, so like I said before, the previous 2 hours we were just in Diane's dream. And now she's waking up. Now we get like this flashback where Adam and Camilla are falling in love on the set of, I think, what is the Sylvia North story?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And apparently Diane and Camilla were like once a couple before this. But it's clear that Diane is being pushed over by this other guy, the director, Adam, which makes sense because if you look back to the other movie, that's why in her dream, Adam loses the film. And that's why he has like gangsters after him and he loses all his money. He loses his wife. You know, people want to beat him up and all that.
Oh. Now, is this the part where Naomi Watts is crying as they're looking at her and laughing?
Yes. No, that
okay. Well,
they don't really laugh at her because they're at the set and Adam's trying to get the kissing scene right with him and his actor. And he's in the car with Camilla/Rita and everyone has to leave the set. But then Camilla says, well, can Diane stay? And he says, yeah, that's fine. She can stay. So in a way, it kind of seems like she's toying with her a little bit. Like, just saying, okay, hey, I'm going to have you watch me and my new boyfriend here. At least that's all I got.
Okay, because I thought this was the, because there's, I don't know that they're laughing at her, but they're laughing and looking in her direction. And it's interesting to, that you guys are saying that basically the beginning of the movie is the dream and that this is the real life, because that to me feels like a stress nightmare that I've had before, like several times. So mm-hmm. I am of the mind that they're both nightmares. There is no reality. They're both the product of somebody's imagination.
Okay. Mm. That's fascinating. I like that. I like that theory there, how they're kind of both like waking up from one nightmare into another.
Yeah.
But to me, the stuff that happens when you find out more about the relationship between Camilla and Diane, that feels it's the real world that influences the dream.
Right.
You know, like, and then after, you know, that sequence on the set where, you know, they both kiss, then there's that moment where both Rita and, Diane and Camilla are at the door of the apartment, and Camilla's like, don't be like this, you know, don't be so mad. And Diane's just, like, really angry at Camilla, and she screams at her, and, you know, they push out. So basically, is at the end of their bad relationship. And then we get to a moment which I'm going to dub Rage Masturbation. Angry Masturbation. This is the scene where Diane just starts masturbating hardcore.
Yeah, and she's just going at it.
She's just like
going at it.
She's starting to like, I know she's, I'm not quite sure if she's like hallucinating.
It's like she's trying to hallucinate while she's doing it.
She wants to get back in the dream, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, that could be. That very well could be, because she keeps going like in and out of focus as she's doing that.
It is the saddest masturbation scene since Boogie Nights.
That's good.
Oh. I guess I have to watch Boogie Nights now. This is the second time that's come up this week.
Wow. But she's like, she's doing some crying too. And I can't tell if she's crying because A, she lost the love of her life and she's feeling hurt by that. Or she's just really just working her stuff down there. I'm afraid she's getting sore.
I think I know why she's crying, but we didn't really get to it yet, which is the scene in the diner with the clumsy hitman.
Oh, okay, well, that comes a little bit later on. But yes.
Right, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I think that might be why she's crying.
Yes, fair enough there, yes. So after this happens, you know, she must have, like, showered, you know, ate some toast, had a coffee, maybe a smoke, I don't know. But she actually ends up getting a phone call from Camilla saying that the car is waiting.
You know what I think? I think most of these scenes, like after she wakes up, I think they're out of order. I think these don't follow one, like, you know, in a chronological order. I don't think these follow one to another. Sure. So, like, I think her waking up and making the coffee was her after the dream, and then she's having flashbacks. Sure. I think she had, like, a flashback to when they were naked on the couch, and then she, you know, Camilla was like, I don't think we should do this anymore. And then it went to the scene at the door he just mentioned. And then I think the masturbation part might be back into the present time.
Sure.
Where she's, you know, thinking about the dream and everything that's happening. And then I think then it goes back, you know, to the flashback a little bit to the part you mentioned about the car. You know, there's a car outside for you. I think all these things are kind of happening out of order.
That you have a good point there, Jason. I will totally agree with that. That these are just sort of like flashes of memories that she has. She has the memory of, you know, when they were together, and the memory when they first broken up. Then there's this memory where she actually goes with she gets invited to this party by Camilla, and she gets invited to... She doesn't know this at the time, but she's actually being invited to Camilla's engagement party, like engagement yeah. announcements. And
well, this was the scene I was thinking of earlier.
Yeah, where she was crying and they yeah. were together. Yeah, yeah. This
yeah.
is the part. And a lot of, not maybe not a whole lot, but a lot of people that showed up in her dream are in this party. Like Coco, for instance, ends up being the director's mom.
Yeah.
Which was kind of cool.
And you get to see the, was it one of the producers who had the espresso? He's there.
Yeah, he's there. Yeah.
She's actually drinking out of the same espresso cup.
Oh, really?
That he had there.
That I didn't catch. I really didn't catch that. That's okay. That's interesting.
And you also see, you know, the woman that was in the photos as Camilla, the one that they said, this is the girl that Adam yes. had to hire.
Melissa George?
Yeah, Melissa, yes. She's there. She's talking to the real Camilla, who was actually Rita in the dreams. Yes. And you also see the cowboy again. And this is what I asked you, folks, because when the cowboy talked to Adam, he said, if you see me, you know you've done good if you see me one time. You know you'll do bad if you see me two times. So here's what. We see the cowboy once with a scene at Adam.
Yeah. Oh.
And then we see the cowboy when he says, hey, pretty girl, it's time to wake up. That's two.
Ew.
But then we also see him in the background at the party.
Oh, so that is.
So that'd be three.
Yeah.
But also, but when he says, if you see me, then he's talking to Adam specifically.
Yeah.
So then I guess.
Well, but I think that was.
Wouldn't count.
I think that might have been also part of, like, this is a little muddled, but I think this is part of Diane's dream. That whole thing with Adam and the cowboys. So this all still could be from Diane's point of view still.
Yeah. So I have the theory that if she sees the cowboy more than once, bad things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And we learn later on that bad things are going to happen.
Yeah, totally.
Because technically both Adam and her saw him two times.
Wait, together. Yeah, that's okay. That's fair.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. Because, yeah, just Diane didn't really... I say the thin theory about Adam because this was all Diane's dream. She dreamt yeah. Adam having this bad life.
And or a bad day, rather.
Bad day. Adam in the no-good, terribly now-good, bad day. That's right. No.
That I did some editing on, apparently, but we'll talk about that later.
Oh yeah. Oh, shit. Oh, well, damn. Very... Very cool.
I'll tell a story later.
Okay. and so basically I just had this theory that since she's dreaming everything there, that she sees the cowboy, then the cowboy says, you know you're doing bad, and bad things happen. But that's just a theory. Trust me, folks. We are
that's a
one
good theory, though.
We are one of, like, millions of other theories that happen about Mulholland Drive, all right? Oh, one thing, too, is that... when we kind of get that repeat sequence of where the limo is driving Rita.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But now we're getting Diane in the car.
Yeah.
And she learns about the address that they're heading to is on Mulholland Drive. We also find out at this house that Diane won this Jitterbug dance contest and that she auditioned for a few roles. One of them was the Sylvia North story. And that's the role she really, really wanted bad. But Camilla ended up getting the role instead.
Yep.
And that's why I feel like that audition scene that happened in one of our previous chapters, that was really kind of like an important moment because that was Diane's dream to be known as being a great actress. Because when she talks to the party, she says that the director didn't think much of me. And now yeah. she wanted to have... her own dream where the directors are like so flabbergasted to have her, but she's like, I'm too good for you. I'm going to be in this other project instead. And yep. the project that she wants to go for is to see what North story. There's that sequence where Adam, you know, sees her out in the distance and he's auditioning all these girls and he's like, holy shit, this should be the girl I should want. This should be the creme de la creme star. And it's that sort of like, dream persona that we all have about Hollywood, because I think it's brilliant that Lynch sets this in Hollywood, because Hollywood is known as the dream factory, And we always hear those stories about people making it in Hollywood.
Yeah, it's a real place that has an inherent unbelievability to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It roots in both of what we know to be true and what we hope can come about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very, very good point there, Ryan. So while they're there, while Diana's at this party and she's seeing all these people from her dreams, Camilla and Adam announce their engagement.
Yes.
And this thing you're talking about, this is the scene where Diane starts crying. And I have seen, like, behind-the-scenes footage of the scene with Naomi Watts just crying on cue and getting that look just right. And it's really cool. I mean, to see...
It's remarkable. She's so fucking good in this scene.
Yeah.
Oh, heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can definitely feel that, you know, age was, I mean, she had this woman that she loved and she'd been passed over. She kind of lost her dreams. She's not this famous actress that she wanted to be. She doesn't have her love life anymore. She's living in this, like, run-down bungalow, you know, doesn't have a job. I'm sure she's feeling disappointed by everyone in her life, including her grandparents.
And herself.
Yes. And... the rage in her face just builds and builds, and we get, like, probably what I think is one of the greatest jump cuts in history. And that's my opinion. But then we suddenly jump to her at this diner. She's back at Winky's. And who is she there with?
Aw, man!
Our favorite hitman.
The same bumbling hitman, but he has this different persona about him. He's
actually good at his job in this part.
Yeah. Which is really just kind of like a weird thing to see. And so basically Diane's there at Winky's and she gives him the headshot of Camilla. And he says, don't show me this thing here. And she says, well, it's just a headshot. And he says, you know, once you give that money to me, it's a done deal. Are you sure you want this? And she's like, more than ever. So... she is putting out a hit on Camilla. She's paying this guy to put a hit out on her.
Yep.
And then, you know, he says, you know, when this is done, you'll find this where I tell you it is. And she goes, what is it open up? And he just starts...
It's a blue key. I don't think he said it was a blue key.
Thank you. Yes, he holds up the blue key. The same blue key that opened up the box that made them disappear. So,
and when she wakes up from the dream, we notice the blue key is on the coffee table.
Yes. Good observation there, Jason. Holy shit. I didn't think I caught that right away.
Yeah, it like right when she's walking I think it was before she was entering the door. We kind of go to the table really quickly and there's the blue key there, and then, you know, we're like, why is there a blue key there? And then he explains all that, and then we were like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And then things start to get kind of wonky, kind of crazy. We see the same bum from the alleyway, and he has this...
blue box.
He has the same blue box in a paper bag, drops on the ground. The two old people from the beginning of the movie, they... run out of bots.
And they're like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids size people running out of this paper bag.
Yeah.
Like, it was so... then it starts like... then you're like, well, what the fuck is going on? Because you're already kind of confused. If this is your first time watching the movie, you're kind of thrown off by everything. Because you're... everything was making sense. And then she wakes up and then everything's suddenly different. And then you're just adjusting to... okay, I guess that was a dream, maybe. Her name's not Betty, it's Diane, and that's not Rita, that's Camilla, and here's these other people that show up, but they're different people. And then it's like little tiny old people come out of a crumpled paper bag, and then you're like, what the fuck?
See, but I always want to think that these, you know, old people are sort of like represented her failures in life. Like, her grandparents coming out there, these are like, you know, because she comes to... California, because I think that when she talks in the sequence at the dinner party, she mentions that her aunt was an actress that who passed away and left her some money. So I'm pretty sure her grandparents raised her. And so when she had a chance to go to Hollywood, California, you know, the grandparents, I don't know, maybe they had maybe doubts about her making it in there, but I'm sure they're still supportive. And when she didn't do it, she didn't make it big. That's when her she didn't want to disappoint her grandparents. And so them coming at her is just a reminder of she's being a failure. Also, it tends to remind her that she ended up putting a hit out on the woman that she loves. So all these things are just kind of piling on top of her. I don't know, Ryan, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I still maintain that, I mean, because it's not unusual for Lynch movies to have multiple people look identical.
Okay.
If you go to even TV shows, if you go to Twin Peaks, you have Cousin Maddie, who looks identical to her cousin Laura Palmer.
True.
And nobody ever really makes too big of a deal out of it, except for it kind of sends Leland down a bad path. But I honestly think that these are just two different people in the same reality that just happen to look the same.
Tabula say, oh, okay. That's a totally different theory right there, Ryan. So you're saying that both Diane and Betty are part of the same dream.
Yes, or that they're both in whatever kind of reality that Lynch movies are in, and they just haven't interacted.
Gotcha.
They
so they
just look the same.
So they're kind of two separate stories, you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Huh.
I didn't think about it that way, but
that is interesting. I will say that. That is an interesting theory.
I can definitely kind of see it both ways here, and I'm kind of loving it very much. For me, like, when the grandparents come in, she's having the reminder of all the failures she had. I'm looking at, like, Betty and Diane as being two of the same person. Like, Betty is Diane's dream self. And Diane is Betty's waking self. And they're both kind of, like, connected that way. But I can totally see it of them being two separate people as well. That's totally cool. And then, so after these old people are coming at her, and so she's getting these two old people yelling and screaming at her, but she's getting this knock on the door. I don't know what that knock on the door is supposed to be.
I don't know. It could be the detectives, because they said something about detectives were looking for her when she woke up.
That is true.
And we find out that she put a hit on her ex-girlfriend, whatever, so it could be them, you know, maybe asking her, because I've been watching a lot of true crime shit recently, and the number one suspect in murders is always either the current boyfriend / girlfriend or ex-boyfriend / girlfriend. So if she's an ex-girlfriend, she's probably like suspect number one.
Yes.
Especially when Camilla was revealed to be getting married to someone else, going to get married to someone else. So that's like motive right there. And if I was a cop and I found all this out, I'd be like, yeah, let's go talk to this Diane chick. I think she's going to she better have some answers for us.
Look, Bob, she's there angrily masturbating. That has to be a sign of something.
Should we cover it, boss? Hold on.
Let her finish.
Let's just wait.
Let her finish.
God, this is bad. I love it. So after she gets chased by the old people, she starts yelling, screaming. She runs into her bedroom. She grabs a gun from her drawer and she shoots herself. And this is where we get the kind of dead body that happens in the beginning part of the movie. So she's dead. Now we're seeing all these images of both Rita and Betty back when they were still kind of together and happy, and these scenes of Los Angeles, and there's beautiful music from Angelo Badalamenti, and then we're back at the club, and we just hear this older woman up on the balcony say the word silencio.
You know, there's somebody I follow on Letterboxd that I absolutely adore, And she said that the movie was about somebody who jerks off so hard that she ends up killing herself.
Wow. Okay.
That's the best way I've ever heard anybody describe this movie. Immediately, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what that is.
Damn. I'm looking at this movie in a whole new way now.
Yeah, holy crap.
I want there to be like maybe a fan cut that does cut it over that way, because you can recut this movie and totally confuse the fuck out of people if you do.
Or it might make sense. One of the two.
Yeah, maybe if you take a movie that doesn't seem to make sense and take it out of order, it will make sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would imagine like I opened it with, you know, the rage masturbation, then cut to the bumbling hitman who can't hit
then
his targets.
Then cut back to the masturbation, then go to Winkies, and then back to the masturbation, and et cetera.
Yeah.
No, I'd only use the masturbation scene once, but I would start the movie with just rage masturbation, get really people uncomfortable right away, and then have some little late moments there. Then maybe you're a suicide, and then the moment with like the producers with the espresso, so just really just confuse the hell out of people. I don't know.
And Star Wipe credits.
Star Wipe credits. but yeah, so that was it. That was kind of like the last session here of our Mulholland Drive. I hope we tried to make sense out of this movie. If we got to have things be more confusing, good. We did our job, because that's what kind of David Lynch wanted you to have. He wanted you to have.
Hey, I have a very quick question.
Okay.
Just since we're wrapping up, we're at the end here. You know that meme that's been going around like on Twitter and Facebook and stuff that says if you were to make a movie and replace all the actors with Muppets but keep one human actor, who would it be? What would be your pick for this movie? Like, what would the one human person be in Mulholland Drive? And I would go with Naomi Watts stays the human and everyone else becomes the Muppets.
I like that.
I'm going to go Robert Forster is the only one who plays himself and everybody else is a Muppet.
What, the cop?
Yes.
Okay.
Just because I like seeing Robert Forster in movies. I don't want to see like Sweetums play that role. I mean, Sweetums could totally play that role, but I don't want to see him do that.
Man, those are both good. See, for me, I'm just... God damn it.
That's tough, right?
I probably would have to go with maybe Adam the director as being the only human.
Okay.
And the rest be Muppets.
I like that.
And something you said last week, I don't know if it was on mic, but that Janice should play
The
Naomi Watts character.
I want to have Janice be the main character.
We actually did talk about casting this movie with Muppets.
Oh, really?
Not having a human being, but just who the Muppets would play.
Oh, I didn't get to hear that last episode yet. I'm sorry, but that's crazy. Okay.
I think it was off mic.
No, I think it poorly like, maybe at the end. But you know, yeah, I would have Janice. But I would have actually Janice, and the only real character I would have would be the role of Rita or Camilla. That would probably be it. I'm gonna change
played
my
played by like, Camilla the chicken that Gonzo's like, in love with.
For my answer.
Oh my god, that'd be perfect. Ryan, yes. So Janice would be Betty. Camilla the chicken would be Camilla / Rita. Yeah.
Well, for my answer with Naomi Watts being the only human, if you cast like Miss Piggy as Rita, that makes that one scene or a couple scenes way more. more interesting.
Like when they go to bed together.
Yep.
Yes.
I'd watch that. You would watch that. Vern would watch that. Everybody would watch that.
I think that would be like a number one bestseller of that rabbit.
Only sold in paper bags.
Okay, I just wanted to ask that really quickly.
Betty would ask, when you're making the mate now with Rita, have you done this before? I don't know.
Man, how's it going, man? Hey, you're naked, man.
Yeah, oh, that's right, because we have, like, we're confusing things right now. Yeah, that's right, have Janice be Betty. Oh, yeah. Wow, man. Oh,
it's like Sue, totally hot, man.
Janice Rage, I don't know, I don't want to see Janice Rage masturbating.
Oh, I do.
Okay, all right, I want to see that too. What the hell? She's a cool chick. What the hell? What can I say? She like,
man, greatest lips in the business because she's 80% lips.
Yeah,
make it happen, Hollywood. Make it happen.
We'll work on the script for that. All right, so that's gonna kind of wrap up this episode real quickly here. Before we go, I just want to give some quick shout outs to some wonderful people who have helped share episodes and just been all in all good people. So no special order. I want to thank the Manic Pixie Weirdo Show podcast, Manic Pixie Weirdo. I want to thank Science Fiction Remnant. I want to thank Mike and Oscar. I want to thank Recasted. I want to thank Shot and Applaud. Uncredited Extras, thank you. Trivia Chick from Trivial Theater. I want to thank First Time Watchers. Brian Chris from Let's Chat Podcast. Ryan L. Terry from Force of Crowd. Kevin R. Brackett from Real Spoilers. JD from Inception Film. And Zenless _ Popcorn. We recently got a new Patreon subscriber, and I definitely want to give a shout out to our wonderful Patreon subscribers. You can find them online. So in no special order, I want to thank Jeanette Millen-Bickenham at AKA Jeanette. I want to thank Matt and Ashley from Mashley at the Movies. They're found on Twitter at Mashley Movies. I want to thank Donnie Roberts of the upcoming Videorama podcast. Donnie is found on Twitter at Unreal Goals. I'm going to mess up your name, Donnie. I apologize immensely about that. I also want to thank Jason Soto from Whatever Jason Soto, who's here with us right now. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah.
Oh.
Welcome.
And then recently we just had on, we just added to our Patreon is Chris Revel of Let's Chat Podcast. Chris is found on Twitter at Let's Chat Revel. So thank you very much for being a Patreon subscriber. Really appreciate that. If you're listening to this right now on Patreon, on our regular channel, I just released an episode where I review three other David Lynch movies that were previously on our Patreon page, but now they're available for everyone else. And I just put it into like one lump sum. So go listen to that on our main channel. And you're going to listen to this on our main channel on Mondays when it gets released. Thank you for that. You can listen to all our past episodes. We are at cinemarecall.net. We're available on Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, every place you can find podcasts. We're there. Don't forget to check out our Facebook group called Crack, Cinema Recall's Awesome Cinematic Club. And I got some news for you folks. This is going to be kind of like our last episode for a while. I'm going on a bit of a hiatus. I plan to release, you know, episodes up on Patreon once in a while, but I'm not going to do like regular movie reviews. I'm thinking about just reading erotic fiction. That's right.
You got to go where the money is, man.
I'm going to read erotic fiction, like chapters from erotic fiction with my docile tones, my voice.
Oh. Righty.
Just
so the greatest erotic stuff?
Yes.
Awesome.
Just
awesome.
Just to be me reading the best in erotic fiction. And I may even do this on Twitch so you can see me live doing this. I might wear a robe. Who knows? I don't know. But
maybe the robe will be open?
Oh, maybe. But you'll have to tune in a few weeks to find out about that later on. But first of all, big thank you to my wonderful guests, Ryan. Tell the listeners any new things you want to plug.
Sure. The Reels of Justice is still going strong. We take a movie and we have a judge, a jury, a defendant, and a prosecutor. Vern has been on it twice. It's so much fun. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Then I have the Coolness Chronicles, which I just finished 100 episodes on Mystery Science Theater, the greatest thing ever. And now I'm moving on to a miniseries about Toy Story, and then a year-long odyssey all about the making of Airplane and its legacy.
Oh, hell yeah.
And you can find it, again, wherever podcasts are found. I'm also on Patreon at patreon.com/coolnesschronicles. And I'm on the social medias, Coolness Pod Ryan on Twitter and the Coolness Chronicles on Instagram, and we're on Podchaser.
Very nice. Jason.
Yes.
Mr. Soto, what is going on with the whatever with Jason Soto?
Okay, so the episode that is out right now for everyone to listen to was the big giant episode that I did, that me and Mary did with the MILF cast. You can definitely check that out. That is out on Spotify, Anchor, Apple, Google, wherever you get awesome podcasts. You can also go to rabbitholepodcast.com. That is the home of all the podcasts that I have a hand in. We just recorded an episode of Top 5 A through Z last night, where we talked about our favorite movies that begin with the letter K.
Oh man, moving up there.
That should be up. Let's see, you put these out on Monday, so this should be out like a day or two after this episode is out into the main world. So
now, greatest movies with the letter K. So does that mean everybody pick Kentucky Fried Movie?
Well, that may or may not show up. You have to listen to the podcast and find out. So you have to definitely check that out when it's released. And that's it. Just rabbitholepodcast.com. Go check that out.
Very cool. I love to come back on to one of the shows again, because I was on the Top 5 podcast, talked about Top 5 movies with the letter C. I had fun.
Yes. Yeah, we'll definitely have you back. Absolutely.
Very cool. All right, folks. Well, as always, thank you for listening. And actually, before we leave, gentlemen, give me funk song lyric.
Funk song lyric?
Funk. Yeah.
Okay. Boy, I gotta think about that. Man, you got me in a bind.
70s funk.
Yeah, I know. I'm definitely trying to think. Okay. Play that funky music, white boy. Play that funky music, white. Play that funky music, white boy.
Okay, that's done. You're good. I love it. Ryan, let's hear your favorite, let's go 90s alternative rock impersonation.
Oh, I can do Cher as Eddie Vedder.
Yes.
Here I'm blue.
There you go.
What?
That's
okay.
God damn it.
The song Even Flow as sung by Cher.
That was brilliant. Oh, gosh. Oh, I love this one. I love doing the show. All right, that's it, everyone. Good night. I'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Adios.